hearing on House Bill 1520, Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mr. Siebert, would you warn us of what we've got here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, at your place you have a number of handouts from the department. You have some of the performance measurement documents that were not included in their budget. These are the DAS documents that lay out the performance measures, the data, and also the performance measure review by the DAS review team of the department's performance measurements. You also have a memo from the department with the Habitat Division headquarters and field positions of all the habitat positions. This has the corrected number from the discussion yesterday and removes the positions that are not in the budget. You have a copy of the Fall Creek Hatchery Research Center concept proposal and also a packet of material in response to a question yesterday from Representative Johnson on cougars.
Yeah. Thank you. Director Ball? You're on.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Before moving into the ways and means of schedule, Mr. Chair, I would like at this time to ask Mr. Dan Edge to come forward, and we would like to give you a brief overview on our Fall Creek Hatchery Research Center.
Thank you.
Dan?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dan Edge. I'm the department head in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife at Oregon State University.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, here about a year and a half, 2 years ago, the exact date is beyond my recollection at this time, I called Mr. Edge up and asked if he would be interested in forming a partnership between the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Oregon State University with a hatchery research center located at Fall Creek to conduct research on salmon, steelhead, and trout, as well as providing an opportunity for students to learn. And I must say, a selfish motivation on my behalf for my agency to recruit the best and the brightest from Oregon State University in fisheries management and fisheries aquaculture. Mr. Edge responded without hesitation, I might add, yes, we'd be excited to help. It sounds very good to us, and so since that time, he has allowed his staff to work with us in looking at a hatchery research, hatchery design, and also future research project subjects. The hatchery itself would be located at Fall Creek Hatchery, which is a mothballed hatchery at this time, down on the Alsea River. We have housing, we have buildings, we have the water right, we have the land mass of 31 acres. We have an existing production hatchery on site that's not being used. We would need to add to the facility and to provide a classroom and a wet lab, dry lab that is in the plans of the packet that you were handed. In addition to that, we'd have to put in a tank farm, separate water course systems where we could create a live stream to watch life cycle development in our fisheries between family groups, and then potentially do some genetic pedigreeing of different fish and the success of their return and other research aspects. It comes with a price tag. As many of you in the room have heard from me before, it's about $7 million to affect the construction of a facility there. That budget broken out for you on inside the document just before the plan. It comes to a total of $7 million. And of course, the largest price tag on that list is the Learning Resource Center itself with $2.1 million. It's a building, and that's why it costs the most, but it also has a lab, a wet lab and a dry lab in it as well. We don't need such an extensive wet lab or dry lab at on site as we do back at because we do have the facilities back at Oregon State University that we'd be able to utilize in the partnership. So otherwise, that would cost quite a lot more money. I'd like to bring your attention to page 9, which shows a map of the Pacific Northwest. And on that map, you've heard some symbols that identify existing hatchery research centers. With a small circle, you'll see that there are two in Idaho. There are four in the state of Washington. Oregon has none. And please note as well that the Washington coast does not have a hatchery research center. Looking at this from a region base, we would complement the Pacific Northwest in hatchery research and fisheries research by locating it on the coast. We could then transfer the knowledge that we learn to the Washington coast as an efficiency aspect of research in the region. We would not want to duplicate what's already taking place in the states of Washington and Idaho.
Dr. Ball, wouldn't some of this information relate to inland as well, though?
Mr. Chair, there could definitely be some information learned from the coastal hatcheries that could be transferred to hatcheries inland as far up as the Snake River in Idaho, depending upon the hatchery or the research design in the project. But then again, we wouldn't want to locate the research center in Northeast Oregon, because a lot of things that they would learn in Idaho and the Upper Columbia River in Washington, we could most likely apply to Northeast Oregon. But certainly things that would pertain to a coastal seminar, we could transfer that information and utilize that in the state of Washington as well. I think with that, I'll conclude my comments, Mr. Chair, and ask that Mr. Edge speak a little bit about the partnership that would exist between the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Oregon State University.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm pleased to be able to come today. When Lindsay mentioned that he talked to me over a year ago about the possibility of developing a collaborative relationship, I was very excited. We have at Oregon State done research and education related to fisheries and wildlife for since 1935. It's the second oldest department in the country at a university relating to fisheries and wildlife. And our relationship with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has been good for probably ever since the department was founded. So looking for opportunities to increase that relationship is always an exciting opportunity, I think, and something that I'm always supportive of. This hatchery in particular, obviously I'm sure the committee is well aware of the scientific merits and the need for this type of research and the need to train future professionals to be able to use hatcheries in an appropriate manner so that we can both sustain commercial and recreational fisheries as well as restore native salmonids. Oregon State University, the partnership that we envision is primarily our role would be sort of twofold. We have a huge research expertise in the area of fisheries. We have specialists in the areas of fish physiology, looking at both stress and reproductive physiology. We have expertise in aquaculture. We have folks who work in population and conservation genetics. We have folks that work on behavioral ecology and life history strategies of salmonids, as well as salmonid habitat ecology, and then fish disease and parasites. And that expertise isn't just within the unit I manage. It's also at the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station. It's in the Department of Microbiology, the Center for Fish Disease, perhaps the College of Veterinary Medicine. They have an aquatic health person as well. And so there's a large group of folks on campus that have the capability to provide quite a bit of traction in this area, and in fact already are in some respects. As an educator, one of the real exciting things is the opportunity that a center like this would provide from the standpoint of the education that we do. We have folks that we train for bachelor's of science degrees, master's of science degrees, and PhDs, and the research that would occur on the site, I think, would be just ideally suited for training master's and PhD folks. It clearly could attract folks from all over the country from the standpoint of postdoctoral associations as well as just international associations for scientists. The center, as it is envisioned, is a wonderful site because of the location halfway between the Hatfield Marine Science Center, where we have a large staff, and Corvallis. And that's within a 40-minute drive from either location, and wonderful field site, field laboratory capabilities for taking your students out in the field and really showing them what this really means. And the internship capabilities are very exciting as well. So from my standpoint, the scientific merit of the project, as well as the educational opportunities for not just our students, but what we learn at this hatchery will be important for bringing folks in from around the Pacific Northwest and providing professional development opportunities. And then finally, I guess one other opportunity that has occurred to me is the Extension Service has quite a substantial group of folks that do watershed enhancement kind of training under the Oregon Plan. And a facility like this where you could take people from watershed councils and bring them in would be just an ideal opportunity, a pretty neat place to really develop some synergy.
Because I think it's an opportunity we have with the facility that's sitting there now that hopefully we can find some funding and get this project started before we go to the session. Any questions of committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has the university discussed at all whether or not if there were private charitable foundations to help advance this enterprise that the university could act as the fiscal agent?
We have not had those particular discussions, but as you're probably aware, the university does have some quite a bit of experience in foundation kind of work, and so I would guess something like that could be worked out pretty easily.
Good.
Senator Krueger?
I think it's a great opportunity, since Lindsay talked about even before that concept, I think has been in a lot of our minds that, hey, this is something we needed to do for a long time. I think it fits well with the Oregon Plan and what we need to know to fulfill that obligation. I did have a comment or two the other day with Jim Meyer from the governor's office. And I'd like to have some testimony as to where Jim Meyer would be on the issue, where the governor might be, talk a little about the cooperative thing of who might all be involved, federal, state agencies, that type of thing. I don't know if you haven't covered that completely yet.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krueger, this is not part of the governor's balanced budget or revised budget. However, the governor's office has recognized the importance of the Hatchery Research Center at Fall Creek. About a month ago, the governor signed a letter that was sent to the congressional delegation asking them to search for federal dollars to help with this venture at Fall Creek. In talking with Mr. Myron, and I'm certainly not wanting to put words in his mouth, but he can help me on the back of the head of whatever he wants to do if I'm misquoting him. But
he will. He's smiling.
He's so far he's smiling. I'll let you know if that changes.
But I think if we can find funds that don't impact other programs, I think you'd find a supportive voice from the Natural Resource section of the Governor's Office.
Jim, would you like to protect yourself here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Myron with the Governor's Office. Yeah, we are very supportive of the concept of the Fall Creek Research Hatchery Program, and as Director Ball mentioned, the Governor did send a letter to the delegation seeking some federal funding. It seems to me that we ought to be able to cobble together some additional funds as well. I think Director Ball has some thoughts in mind in that regard. Also, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board has a research fund that could we could utilize some of the funding. It's, yeah, I certainly don't want to take all of the funding out of that OWEB research fund, but there's an ability to put together funding from a number of different sources here to get this project up and running. And I'm personally very pleased to see the Department of Fish and Wildlife restoring the connection with Oregon State University. I think that that's critical for the future, and we're very pleased to see that. Happy to answer any questions.
Question? Okay, Lindsay, does that complete this part of it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity. And Dan, thank you for coming today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Lindsay, could we go back to the, would you like to deal with the bill before us today and then start your program after that?
House Bill 2209, I believe it is?
Yes.
Yes, sir, we will.
Let me recess the public hearing on House Bill 5020 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2209.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Anglin, the Wildlife Administrator, Wildlife Division Administrator, will provide you with a testimony today on House Bill 2209.
Good afternoon, Chair Messerly, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. This bill came about because slightly over a year ago, when faced with collecting some animals from the air, we discovered in review of statutes that we did not have the legal authority to kill wildlife from an aircraft. And in looking at the types of activities that in the past we had conducted and that recent court cases and interpretation of language now said we couldn't do, we felt that it would be very important to bring forward this bill and seek that authority that would allow us specifically to deal with some incidences related to potential disease outbreaks in wildlife, trying to control the spread of that and conduct the sampling that might need to be taken to protect other wildlife, and in certain circumstances to protect domestic livestock, to help us with scientific collection as part of our research operations, and to also help us at times where it might be possible or needed from a human safety standpoint or to locate and dispatch injured wildlife. The prohibition not only extends to the direct take from an aircraft, but also extended to transmitting from an aircraft to somebody on the ground and then having that person on the ground not being able to conduct that activity also. This bill would help us in being able to carry forward our mission, and that's why we're bringing it forward to you.
Okay, thank you. Questions, committee? Senator Johnson.
Just a comment. Some now almost 25 years ago, as a fledgling helicopter pilot just starting working commercially, I ended up taking a bunch of hunters out and couldn't understand why they were so thrilled when we discovered large numbers of elk. That was my first experience with this statute, and discovered as soon as we returned home that it was, in fact, illegal. Having seen it from the air and see how well animals can be managed from the air, I am glad to see that this is being used as a management tool by the department, but will not be expanded in any way to the general population. The disadvantage to the game animals and the advantage to hunters is so pronounced. But as a management tool for the kind of work you're doing, I'm very supportive of this as an additional tool in your toolbox. I'm just, what I'm saying, having done it, I know how efficacious it can be, and I think it's fine.
Okay. Any other questions, comments?
I know what you're going to say, Senator.
Well, just for the record, I'm trying to figure out why this bill is down here. Just for the record, is this going to cost you anything?
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, if we have to employ this and we're using aircraft, that does come to a cost to the agency. Usually it's an unbudgeted cost, especially if you're dealing with a disease outbreak in wildlife. As an example, with the TB efforts that we were looking to try and control a year ago and the sampling that we spent about $50,000 that we had to pull out of other budgets to cover that, and we hadn't actually got to the on-the-ground or out-of-the-air sampling that would have run that cost up well over $150,000 to $200,000. So there is a financial cost to us if we have to employ these, and it's not built into a specific research project or something like that.
Okay, but just passing this bill, if we pass it, won't cost you anything. And you already fly. I mean, you fly for a variety of reasons.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out somebody's logic. I guess somebody had some. Can I vote now?
Yeah, Senator, I just want to say that
I do whatever they tell me to at this level. You know that.
Good thought.
Representative Johnson.
Well, I just want to make sure that we close the loop because I was going to ask exactly the same question that Senator Dukes did. You fly for a variety of reasons now and own department aircraft, so you're not asking to acquire aircraft. You're just asking to have the statute modified that you can do game management utilizing aircraft, and heretofore that has been prohibited by the statutory language.
Chair Messerly, Representative Johnson, that's correct.
And it's limited to your department, not any others.
Chair Messerly, Representative Johnson, it would also extend to our agents that if we hired somebody to specifically do that activity for us.
Mr. Siebert, would you like to clarify this?
I just wanted to point out to the committee, Mr. Chair, that you have a staff measure summary at your place that explains the bill. The bill came from the House Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee. There is no fiscal impact or no revenue impact on the bill. I do believe that the concern was that the department had no funding in their budget. But as a contingency measure, the department, if they were to expend money on this activity, they would have to find the money within their own budget. And it's not something that we normally budget for every 2 years because it may not happen.
Chair, are you looking for a motion?
Let me close the hearing first. Close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2209.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2209. It's headed. It would go to the House floor. Moved House Bill 2209 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. You've all heard the motion. Is there any objection? Motion carries. Any volunteers on carrying it?
I'd volunteer.
Madam Pilot?
Yeah.
Would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Betsy will carry in the House. Joan, do you want to carry in the Senate? Senator Dukes will carry in the Senate. Now, we don't need a carrier then in the...
You need one in the floor.
Okay. Would you like to represent the...
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Close the work session and reopen House Bill 5020. Director Ball.
Chair Messerly, members of the committee, there are two documents that I have for you. The first is a correction on the field positions and FTEs assigned to Habitat Division and field positions. I believe Mr. Siebert has maybe passed that out to you already.
Got it.
Okay. Noted that it has been handed out. And also, absent from yesterday's handout, was the Cougar Management Plan and our plans to update that in the next 2 years. That has been handed out as well for your review.
Representative Johnson.
You're an hour and a half too late, Director Ball. The Cougar Bill was the last bill that we did on the floor this morning. I appreciate having it, though. I'm teasing.
Okay. Mr. Chair, next on the agenda will be a presentation by Pam Ryan on the Administrative Services Division.
After
afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pam Ryan, Deputy Director for Administration. I'm going to start on page 77 under the tab Administration. I'll briefly go through the administrative programs and touch on the budget. The administration budget for the department includes the commission, the director's office, administrative services division, human resources division, information education division, and information systems division. The director's office consists...
Excuse me, Pam. staff just informed me that we had a sign-up sheet on the bill, and I didn't know it, so if you'll bear with me, let's... close this hearing. I'll reopen public hearing on 2209. Again, we'll recess. I appreciate your
indulgence. Close the public hearing on 50, recess the hearing on House Bill 5020. Reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2209. I'd like to call Mr. Elkins, Mr. Dalyabana, and do we have three chairs? Let's get Mr. Warren Avery. Am I saying that right?
Sir, he stepped out for a moment.
Okay. We'll catch him when he comes back. Then. Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing us to have the opportunity to speak this afternoon. For the record, my name is Joe Dalyabana. I'm the chairman of the state board with the Oregon Hunters Association. And basically, I have a prepared statement that I would like to read in support of House Bill 2209. I am here today to speak in support of that, a bill that provides the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife or its agent specific authority to utilize aircraft for wildlife management activities. House Bill 2209 grants authority to ODF&W to hunt game mammals or game birds with the aid of an aircraft and transmit information on the location of game mammals or game birds to staff on the ground. While the department has had for many years the statutory authority to use aircraft in capturing these animals, it is not clear that the department can locate and report quickly the status of mammals or birds with the aid of aircraft. This uncertainty became abundantly clear when ODF&W was faced with the finding of TB and a cervid elk at the Rudia Ranch in November of 2001. It became apparent to OHA at that time that the tools to visualize whether sick or dying wildlife around that ranch existed were very limited. OHA members were concerned that the disease had spread to wildlife in that area, and we wanted ODF&W to investigate by air and see if there was sick or dying wildlife due to the TB. We found out at that time that ODF&W had concerns whether it could in fact use an aircraft in search of herds and radio to the ground any sightings within an 8-hour reporting period without violating the law. House Bill 2209 gives the department authority to kill game mammals or game birds from aircraft or allowing communication from an aircraft on locations of game mammals and birds. This bill provides a valuable tool when wildlife management situations require timely, specific, and efficient responses. And that concludes my testimony, and I will be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's it. Do you have any? That's all yet. Is Mr. Annie in the hall, do you know?
He's not. I haven't written testimony.
Could you just submit that, or would you like to read it, or would you just like to submit it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I apologize for the mix-up, but, you know, that's our first mistake all year. With that, I'll again close the public hearing on House Bill 2209 and reopen House Bill 5020. Lindsay, would you like to try again?
Mr. Ready. Chair, members of the committee, again, Pam Ryan, Deputy Director for Administration. I briefly went over the support divisions of the department, and I'll give you a high-level summary of their activities. The director's office consists of the director, two deputies, and support staff. The administrative service division is responsible for budget services, fiscal services, licensing and control funds, and procurement services. Some of the major factors affecting their service delivery include not enough support staff for the increasing demand of new grant funding, budget changes, procurement, and contact requirements. While the Human Resources Division implements workforce diversity programs, classification and compensation programs, recruitment and selection, safety and health, workforce development, they too have some factors that are affecting their service delivery, and that includes a lack of qualified applicant pools in some specialized areas. Our information education program implements their services through angler education program, hunter education, master hunter program, trapper education program, and shooting range development. They also coordinate the work of 1,053 volunteer instructors, which educate about 8,000 hunters and 2,000 anglers annually. They provide information on fish and wildlife laws, coordinate outreach efforts for the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. They disseminate information to the media and public about outdoor recreational opportunities to promote participation in fishing and hunting. Some of the factors affecting their service delivery include limited staff for their educational programs, their outreach activities, and also their program information. On page 86 is our Information Systems Division, and they're our information technology support group that works with our network management, and they're also responsible for all aspects of the point-of-sale system. They also coordinate with the Oregon State Police Fish and Game Division to enable enforcement staff to access the point-of-sale database for suspension and violation information. Probably the most important thing affecting the delivery of service is going to be the hardware supporting the point-of-sale system is reaching the end of its lifespan. Most of the hardware is more than 5 years old, and we'll need to be reviewing that within the next few years for replacement or upgrades. On page 88, you'll see that the budget for administration is $28.9 million. And on page 89, I want to provide a little breakdown on the total cost for the department. The program costs represent 88.4% of total, while the operating costs for the support functions of the agency represent 7.7%, and the fixed costs represent 3.9%. The fixed costs are those items that could be spread across programs if we didn't centralize them for efficiencies, and they include state government service charge, unemployment insurance, attorney general charges, building operations, rent, utilities, telephone, and so forth. The effect of the 2001-03 special session general fund reductions has biennialized for 03-05 is $129,000. And on finally, on page 90, you'll see that the base budget total represents $29.3 million, and there are 10 packages that I'd briefly like to go over with you on. On package 010 is a vacancy savings factor of $47,000. And on package 020, we phased out of the point-of-sale system contractor for a little over $215,000, and we phased out the one-time department deferred maintenance program of over $2 million. We also have package 030, which is the inflation and the price list adjustments. The standard inflation is $327,000, while the price list is $622,000. The increases in the price list are related to the liability insurance for $360,000 and workers' comp for $308,000. Package 070 reduces the programs to due to anticipated shortfall to maintain current service level. Package 081 and 091 are savings based on special session reductions in the rebalance plan. while 411 restores the program's reduced in package 070, and that is contingent upon the passage of House Bill 2260, our fee increase bill. Packages 49 and 450 establish the limitation for the Salem headquarters rent payment by reducing non-limited funding from the retirement of debt associated with the sale of the Portland headquarters office building. Package 440 restores two limited duration positions in our human resources area and increases months of two existing part-time positions in the human resource area. Also adds 12 months to a budget analyst position and restores a position in the director's office that was accidentally removed in special session number 2. And finally, package 470 centralizes unemployment costs from the three divisions of fish, wildlife, and habitat. So the total adjustments make the budget at $28.9 million. And that's all I have, unless you have some questions.
Thank you, Pam. Any questions from committee? I just have to say that I wasn't on this committee last session, but I was chairing the Senate Natural Resource, so I was quite close to everything that was going on within the department. And although, Director Ball, you deserve a tremendous amount of credit for the progress we've seen in this department. Pam, I know you played a big part in that, and I want to thank you for that as well. But
thank you.
I feel a little bit guilty. I know Chair Morgan last session really struggled with all of you getting through this, and this is a pretty easy job for me right now. So,
Chair, something else different.
But
everything is in sequence by page through the entire document. It's not page 3 under section 4. You can get in there, you can go to a page, and it's there. We need to get that to the rest of the other 13 natural resource agencies. They're spread all over the place in 4 books.
And I love to go on this line. The tabs have something on both sides of it.
Yeah.
So you don't have to turn the book over and start over again each time. So I appreciate it. Very well put together.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, that is all the touch of Pam.
Mr. Chair, before Pam goes too far.
Pam, you left too quick.
I apologize.
I got sick right after the governor's budget came out, although I'm sure the two are not related. How do I relate this to the new governor's budget or the co-chair's budget or to, I mean, what I'm, just coming back to this, what I'm having difficulty with is we're happily discussing a budget that's out of balance. Not yours in particular, the whole bigger budget is out of balance. And so is there anything you have that you can...
Let me say, Senator, we had Lisa Pearson present BAM yesterday, and the last page of her presentation does cover the governor's rebalance.
Okay, great. I need something to help me feel like...
And if you'd like, when we have time here, we can ask.
Okay. No, that would be this.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, thanks again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next presenter will be Mr. Ed Bowles, our Fish Division Administrator, covering the capital improvements.
We're ready when you are.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ed Bowles, Fish Division Administrator. Capital improvements are covered under page 93 and 94. Of the capital improvement tabs. I just wanted to briefly go through this fund source. This is used primarily for our pretty large capital projects and our maintenance projects that fund primarily maintenance occurring at our hatchery facilities. That's why I'm up here today with you. And walk you through just very quickly, we have funds coming into this account through other funds, which is the majority of the real dollars within this, and that comes through the R&E program as well as the deferred maintenance sub-account. General funds of small amount that are the basically the emergency maintenance funding that is authorized, and then federal funds is primarily limitation to cover things that come up where we are able to get contracts and funding sources through the federal government to help out with some of the emergency maintenance needs and improvements at the facilities. Our total amounts are $4.3 million of the other fund, $3.2 million of the federal fund limitation, and then the $211,000 with the general fund monies. If you'd like, Mr. Chair, I can go through some of the packages which have influenced this base budget. Package 020 was basically the one that reduced the interest for the deferred maintenance fund because of changes in the stock market and others, and also phased out the R&E program contingent upon House Bill 2259. That comes back in again under Package 430. That reinstates that for the amount of months left over. And then Package 030 is just dealing with standard biennial inflation factors for that piece of it. And 081 and 091 deal with the rebalance plan and reductions taken in the fifth special session, which was relatively minor. That leads us to our account. And as I mentioned earlier, this primarily deals with our hatchery maintenance issue. As I testified yesterday, Mr. Chair, we have a deferred maintenance report that was prepared for the subcommittee as a result of budget note last session, which outlines our deferred maintenance needs at our hatchery facilities as well as other agency facilities. And that, I think, provides us with very solid footing to move forward with potential funding sources to see how we can start nipping this chronic problem in the bud a little bit. That's all I have.
Thank you, Chair. Questions? Senator Dukes?
Thank you for this. I appreciate it a lot. The other funds that you have listed here, most of what we put into the hatcheries is R&E, but I'm assuming that some of it's coming out of the deferred maintenance fund. What's what on under other funds?
Right. Now, the deferred maintenance, Mr. Chair and Senator Dukes, the deferred maintenance subaccount is actually not housed in this capital improvement account, but the interest from that rolls into this, and that is all that we have authorization to spend on for these maintenance projects.
How much
and
is that?
The interest for that is roughly $364,000 of that. So think of it as $4 million of it is the R&E component, and then the $364,000 would be the interest earnings. And that R&E component represents some rollover from last session, just to carry it over, money that wasn't spent, as well as the 1.8 months or 18 months, $1.8 million, and then $600,000 from the 6 months previous because of the sunset issues with the R&E account.
I do get concerned every time we go through this, Mr. Chair, that someday the R&E board may decide they have something besides hatchery maintenance to spend your money on, because we have no, or the agency has no control over how the R&E board spends their money, and the R&E board has been good enough to recognize our needs and to spend their money here, but they could put it someplace else. And so and it's always bothered me. I think we have an obligation to our buildings. I don't care if it's an office building or a fish hatchery, and we've ignored these buildings for so long, and now we rely on a fee that somebody, well, that gets collected and it goes, somebody else is overseeing. In other words, we basically leave our maintenance beholden to somebody else, and that always makes me nervous. I don't know that this is the session, although I don't know that it isn't either. As we look at some capital construction bonding, there needs to come a time when we look at doing some bonding for hatchery maintenance, because every 2 years when we do one of these budgets, we get further behind. I mean, how much of this isn't funded in this budget?
Chair Messerly and Senator Dukes, within this, the report that identifies roughly 13 $4 million in immediate deferred maintenance. Of that $4 million is for state-funded facilities. And none of that is explicitly funded other than what we have available. And I'd mention that even within this other fund account or line, not all of R&E goes for hatchery maintenance. Roughly 50% of the account is available for that because of the restoration side of the R&E program.
So $4 million of your immediate need is state hatch-owned
yes,
facilities.
Yes, that's correct, Senator.
What's the rest of that $13 million?
Federal facilities, deferred maintenance relative to federal facilities.
But we operate them.
That's correct.
All right. So, and we count on sending fish out of those facilities, and we don't have any reason to believe that the feds are going to send us any money to keep them up.
Chairman Ezerly and Senator Dukes, that's correct. It's not only the state that is having difficulties dealing with the deferred maintenance issues. A lot of this is federal-oriented as well. We've had level funding for a lot of our facilities that haven't even taken care of inflationary issues, Mitchell Act and others. So
immediate needs, Mr. Chair, $13 million. That's not longer term. And we're just going to throw, we're going to hope the R&E board will throw a little bit at it because we're not even up to $500,000 in what we can put into it. I just think that that's really bad. And I think that bonding is about the only way we're ever going to get beyond this because it's going to be a long time before we can ever put the general fund into it to do it. And that may not happen even then. So I would just encourage us, when we do look at a bonding bill later this session, to consider this. Now, this is as economic development as anything you're going to find, in both in the short term in terms of the construction, because they're not going to do it themselves. The construction work that's going to be done to do the roofs and, you know, and that sort of stuff, and the longer term, meaning we're going to be able to continue to use these facilities.
I think Senator Dukes, I'm willing to go with you to the co-chairs and present this and see if we can go. I think you agree, though, that it all has to balance out in the other needs of our bonding capacity
for
this year. So.
Yeah, I just look at what some people want to bond for, and this one came up higher on my list. So.
Right. Any other questions in the committee?
Ed, what is the one FTE for?
Chairman Ezerly, that one FTE is in our administrative division, and it's R&E support staff. That's on the fiscal side there to help out with not only the fiscal but also contracting and others related to this.
And support to the board as well?
It's primarily support to our staff. We have a person in Fish Division that is funded through R&E that supports the board.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, we don't even get all of this. You have to subtract the salary and benefits out of there.
Part of the cost of doing business. Director?
Mr. Chair, the next presenter will be Captain Cynthia Cope from the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. As you know, fish and wildlife enforcement is an integral part of our management programs, ensuring compliance with fish and wildlife regulations and statutes.
Good afternoon, Captain.
Good afternoon. Excuse me, I'm suffering from what a lot of other people are right now. My name is Cynthia Koch. I'm the captain of the Fish and Wildlife Division. And it's my pleasure today to talk to you a little bit about our division. And just so that I do have enough voice to get through it, I'll try to do the Reader's Digest version a little bit. And if you have questions, I'll be happy to answer that as my staff come up. The Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division was created by the 1931 legislature when the legislature determined that fish and wildlife law enforcement should be taken care of by a public safety agency rather than fish and wildlife management. purpose of the Fish and Wildlife Division is to assure compliance with laws which protect and enhance the long-term health and equitable utilization of Oregon's fish and wildlife resources. It's important to note that the Fish and Wildlife Division of the Oregon State Police is the only state government agency given the responsibility of fish and wildlife enforcement. in aiding the Fish and Wildlife Division with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which takes care of management. We have developed a process called cooperative enforcement planning, in which back in 1989, the superintendent of the state police and the director of the Fish and Wildlife Division, or Department of Fish and Wildlife, excuse me, signed a document in which fish and wildlife managers and from both the biological side and the enforcement get together once a year and determine what the priorities of fish and wildlife are for that year. They're rated on a high, medium, and low in their prioritization. After the priorities have been determined, officers then in the field write action plans and determine what issues are actually going to be given more time and effort than others. After these action plans are put into place, which includes the state police, fish and wildlife management, as well as other state agencies, a critique is done at the end to determine how well the action plan was put into place and if the needs were met. We see this as a holistic approach to fish and wildlife enforcement as these resource priorities are identified. Just a little bit about our division. We are divided into two sections. It's pretty self-described, the fishery side, which handles both commercial, such as it is, and sport fishing. And on the wildlife side, we handle policies and enforce laws and regulations affecting the wildlife, as well as marine enforcement is handled on that section. Although no longer a section, we do have an important component to both program areas, and that is our division's aircraft. We have four aircraft that are assigned fairly strategically in the state in Baker City, Bend, Central Point, and Salem. Beyond supporting the division's needs for enforcement, the aircraft also does many, many fish and wildlife management flights. ODFW is what I'm referring to. We assist in criminal investigations with Department of Forestry on some occasions. Another component of the division is the environmental crimes enforcement personnel. We have one person assigned to the Department of Environmental Quality as a criminal investigator. And lastly, the other component I'd just like to talk about is we have three individuals who are assigned to the Special Investigations Unit. And these people who are not out in the regular field but more as investigators do long-term complex investigations involving individuals or groups who are involved in violations of fish and wildlife laws, with specific emphasis on those who are exploiting or illegally commercializing Oregon's fish and wildlife resources. Currently, the Fish and Wildlife Division has 110 FTE, including myself and my management staff, officers, in other words, who are assigned to fish and wildlife enforcement. The Fish and Wildlife Division works with many other state and local agencies, including Washington Fish and Game, the National Marine Fisheries, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, as well as InterTribe. We try to use meetings with them to facilitate the exchange of information and coordination of enforcement activities, both on the Columbia and its tributaries. We see this as a means of providing pertinent enforcement information and advice to our team of people. We also coordinate with the United States Coast Guard for conducting joint boat patrols on offshore marine enforcement. Briefly, from a historical standpoint, we've seen our numbers of enforcement officers drop in the last two sessions. The 1999 legislature increased our staffing to 128 FTE, and throughout the last five special sessions, we have dropped to 110. In compare our agency's costs with others in the area of this area of the United States, we find that with other state agencies, we're the only one actually in the West that only that is a state police agency that does fish and wildlife enforcement. But in making those comparative costs with other fish and wildlife management agencies, we just kind of fall right in the middle of how they are compensated. And lastly, with the governor's rebalanced budget and his revised balanced budget, the Fish and Wildlife Division ends up 12 FTE short from where we are, six which are general funded and six which are other funded.
Sure.
And that concludes.
Thank you. And you made it. You still have a voice.
Questions from committee?
Senator Dukes.
I feel like I should apologize for asking anything. If somebody is not feeling up to shape yet either, it doesn't seem fair, and I tell you we could do this tomorrow if that would work better for you. The 12 that the governor's cutting in his most recent balanced budget is 12 from what? From the 120 or from the 110?
It's 12. Excuse me. Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, it's 12 from, I'm sorry, I don't want to get this wrong. I believe it's 12 from 120.
Okay.
We already have lost six of those from this last special session. There were six general fund that were already lost from that.
Out of that 12, so you would lose another six, but you hadn't funded or hadn't hired 10 of them. You said you were funded in the 0103 budget for 120, but only had 110.
I should explain. Two of my FTE, one is an administrative assistant person who's not on the ground, and another is an unfunded federal position with empty open limitation. Does that make sense? We have a position out there with no funding for it. We have the authorization to fill it.
Okay. No, I'm lost. I was thinking that you were 10 short. If you were funded in the budget for 120, but we, through all the special sessions, had only allowed you to hire 110, you'd be 10 positions short.
We also lost, and I'm sorry if this is confusing, we also lost two general funded positions from the across-the-board cuts that the all state agencies did. So the best way I can explain this is that we had 120 FTE, 110 are officers that are currently working, two are the across-the-board cuts, six are the general fund cuts from the five special sessions, and two more are my secretary and an empty position.
When you add all of this up, does that mean that the 12 less in the governor's budget doesn't take you down any further?
No, it will. It will take me to 106.
106.
Pardon me, 104.
104. Okay. Last winter, before session started, Representative Johnston and I were in a meeting with Dwayne Stanton. And in that meeting, he told us that when he had to lay off, he was going to lay off fish and game officers first. And I then later, which I assumed he did, and then later in the session, I got a frantic call from a commercial fisherman. He said, we're not going to be able to land. And then there was a note from the governor's office saying, I think we took care of that. My frustration, and I'll just say it plainly, is that I keep voting to transfer money from ODFW to Fish and Game so we have enough enforcement, and my commercial fishermen keep getting threatened with not being able to land their fish because that's who gets pulled. We want officers on the road, and I understand that. I want them there, too. But it's very important to my district that I have fish and game officers, you know, to worry about the poaching and all of that, but to make sure that my small businessmen can continue to make a living. How do I get there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, the commercial fishing program from the state police is paid through the general fund. We do not receive any funding from ODFW in support of our commercial fishing program. And so when the governor cut the positions, and legislature, excuse me, cut the positions, that was the program that went. We don't have a lot of other options when it comes to cutting general fund.
So we specifically cut the fund that was to fish and game officers to monitor commercial fishing and didn't know it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dix, I know that this, you know, came up during legislature, and I can't speak for politicians. I would have noticed.
Legislature did. So that's why I'm asking. So I'll have to ask some more. My other question is really a fiscal one. We transfer money over from ODFW's budget to your budget. And I know you have no control. You'd keep a full staff if they would let you. But as I said, somebody keeps deciding, and I assume it's the top somebody, that we need people on the road and not fish and game officers. How do you work that out fiscally? Do you transfer less from ODFW then?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, all of the money that is transferred from ODFW to the Oregon State Police goes to the Fish and Wildlife Division, and it's all attached to an FTE. And so we don't charge them any more or any less than what's used, and the money is not, I guess for lack of other terms, appropriated to officers on the road. For instance, this past biennium, of the 120 positions we muddled through there, 64 of them were ODFW funded, and there were 64 people, most generally speaking, in those positions doing fish and wildlife enforcement work.
So all of the positions that we transfer money over to you, all of those positions continue to be filled?
Mr. Chair, Senator, are you talking about this biennium? I mean,
sure.
Yes. Unless someone, we've had people just here in the last month retire. That would be the only exception that I can come up with.
Okay.
I'm worried, Senator, can I ask a question on this same subject before we leave it? So the dedicated fund, what you're saying is that of all the dedicated funds that go towards your officers, you're getting 64 positions?
In the 2000s.
You get some from lottery, you get some from ODFW. That total is 64 game officers.
Senator Misery, we get money from the lottery. Funds this biennium we're currently in funds 25 positions. We get money from the general fund, which is currently funding only 16 positions. We get money from ODFW, which funds 64 positions. We get money from DEQ, which funds one position. And we get money from the Marine Board, which funds five positions. So hopefully if the math is right, it goes up to 120.
Is there any funding come from any federal sources for your officers?
This past year, this past biennium, we received, just backwards, so we received some money from Parks, which funds half a position on the Deschutes for one of our officers. And then we received $100,000 through NOAA Fisheries that didn't fund officers. It funded some equipment and some education.
One more, and then I'll give it back to you, Senator. So of those, all those dedicated funds, those positions are all filled right now?
Excuse me, I had to think for a second, Mr. Chair. There are a couple exceptions. One is a general funded position at headquarters, which is the wildlife lieutenant position, is not filled. And there is as we just talked about, a couple people who have just retired that are not filled. Just maybe one or two.
But the intent is to fill those.
That would be the intent, yes.
All right. Thank you. Senator Duke,
so continue? Out of the 120, 64 are what I consider fish and game officers. Do we, I mean, the lottery gives you money for other kinds of things. Do you still lump those all into the same fish and game category?
Mr. Chair.
Meaning that they're not patrol officers, maybe?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, all of the money we receive has to be attached to an FTE. And so, for instance, if an officer is funded through ODFW funds or Marine Board funds, that's not all that officer does. The officer will do, for instance, our Marine Board funding, all of our officers do Marine Board. But it has to be attached to an FTE. And it's the same with ODFW funding, in that one single officer doesn't do strictly fish and wildlife enforcement work every single moment of their day. They often have to do maybe a general funded type activity, such as they come across a traffic accident or a hazardous violation occurs in front of them, and since they're an Oregon State Police officer, they do something about it.
So you have 120 positions who are trained to be able to do this stuff? That. I'm still trying to figure out where the 120 positions came from, and I'll give up real quick here, so don't worry about it. But I'm still trying to figure out where that came from.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, all of our officers are trained to do police work, whether it's fish and wildlife. And
right, but I mean, never mind. I'll try later. I have one last thing, Mr. Chair, and that's that I've heard locally some concerns that throughout when we did the layoffs, because we laid off by seniority, that we ended up losing a lot of seasoned fish and game officers, and that now we are training in a lot of new folks who would prefer not to be fish and game officers, but appreciate having the job, and so they're going to be fish and game officers. Give me any sense? I mean, those of us who have areas where people like to take animals and fish and what have you, get a little concerned when some of the more experienced folks are gone, and that may just be our lot in life right now.
Mr. Chair,
I'm sure they're trained, or they will be by the time we're done.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, that's true. When we had the initial layoff, we lost 25 of our fairly young employees. When we hired 45 back, which were not wasn't for fish and wildlife enforcement, because they were junior, they were able to take their fish and wildlife position back. And out of that 40, I believe we've now hired 9 of the 25 back. And so there were 16 who, the 16 positions who are now filled with people who were not in fish and wildlife enforcement at the time. Some of the people who we filled those positions with were people who had been a fish and wildlife officer in the past, who had an interest. To my knowledge, we did not take anyone on who did not wish that assignment. However, may have thought it might have been temporary until the next biennium. We have held training trying to bridge the knowledge gap for the kinds of enforcement that we expect from them.
Thank you. I think your folks do a great job.
Captain, years ago they had officers that were specifically assigned to commercial fish, and you're saying you don't get funded from any commercial fish source? We still have people, for instance, we had a couple at Astoria. You had one at Coos Bay, and you had one at Newport, I believe. I don't know if those positions are still there, and how are they funded specifically, or are they assigned specifically to commercial fish?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, those are the positions I was talking with Senator Dukes about, and that was the program that got cut during the fifth special session. We did have, at one time, I think even up to 8 people assigned to commercial fish enforcement, but over the years it's just gotten shaved down until this last year, this last biennium, we had 4, and those positions did get cut.
And going along the questioning that Senator Dukes had, the concern that I have is when you take people from one division to the other, having been there, I think it would be probably, I could say, safely for game officers that probably would never want to work traffic, and because it's not what you might call your forte, something you really are dedicated to, I think your efficiency and dedication to it are different. And I can think of some traffic officers that I don't care what you did with them, you're never going to make a real game officer out of them. That isn't their thing. They aren't set up to do it. That isn't their mindset. But even though you do your training, I think you've lost efficiency in your agency and the ability to specifically address fish and wildlife enforcement. I've had some conversation with other members of the department about that and the deputy superintendent when he came by, but I just want to make sure there's a record of the fact that you can train, but if that's what someone wants to do, they're not going to be as efficient at it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I agree with you, but this is the hand I've been dealt, and I'm trying to deal with it in the best way possible with the resources that we have.
Captain, I want to come back to the commercial fishermen. We have no officers regulating commercial fisheries now. Is that, am I clear on that?
Mr. Chair, we have no officers who are assigned to commercial fish enforcement. We are responding on a complaint basis, but we don't have a proactive program at this time.
And that's going to carry through into the coming biennium in your budget as well? Same situation?
Mr. Shah is correct, unless we receive funding specifically for that purpose.
And what impact does that have on the commercial fisheries?
Mr. Chair, it has a huge impact on the fishery and on the communities in which those people serve. There are a lot of tasks that we will not be able to complete, whether it's boardings and checks, doing checks at the fisheries and the canneries. It just has a huge impact. And I know that the fishermen have been made well aware of it.
Does the Coast Guard assume some of those duties?
Mr. Chair, I'm sure they do assume some of those duties. But I think that the biggest impact is that we may see no fisheries come in and do what we thought was enforcement that the state was responsible for.
How many dollars would it take backfill to, I don't think it's going to be possible to bring it back to what, 6 or 8 you said you had originally, but to bring back where you would have a presence on the entire Oregon coast? How many positions and how many dollars?
Senator Messerly, that's a little difficult question for me to answer. With 4 positions, I'm sure it would cost close to $800,000 in that for a full biennium. And that's, I'm looking at 180 to 185 per FTE.
Representative Krieger.
Chair, you went to where I was going is because I've dealt with, in fact, I still have in my pocket a National Fisheries Service card by Mr. Lewis, who's a past member, but does not have an expiration date on it. And not to seem...
freelance.
Yeah, I get out there and do a little work. Never thought of that.
Augment your legislative
yeah.
Job.
I was going to volunteer.
But we have seen the mindset of the federal government. The last thing I want is federal officers dealing with my people on the docks. Because I came close to throwing one of them off the dock at Brookings when he was working with me one day, just about that far. They're not respectful of the people or the industry. And I think, Mr. Chair, we need to find some bucks.
Senator Dukes.
I would agree because before once they discover that we don't have anybody out there, and before they get around to sending their own folks, they shut us down. You don't deliver. If they can't be guaranteed that you don't have a protected fish, you don't deliver.
I'm looking to see if the governor's staff's still out here.
No.
I think we've got our work cut out for us. Any other questions, comments?
Thank you. I think your voice actually got stronger as you talked.
You want to keep testifying?
No, but I would like to take Representative Krieger up on his offer to volunteer. We're looking for all the help we can get.
Victor?
Mr. Chair, if I might add a couple of things with respect to commercial fishing enforcement. That portion of the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division budget has been funded and provided by through general funds as a result of the philosophy that since the commercial fish industry is an industry in Oregon, marketing a resource, generating general funds, then general fund money is applied for enforcement of that industry. One of the things that concerns Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife Management is without the appropriate level of enforcement monitoring the trip limits and allocations on commercial catches, the catch on places like the Columbia River on a selective fishery between wild fish and hatchery fish, we do stand to lose an opportunity to sustain our fishery populations in Oregon. We have always experienced high compliance levels in the state of Oregon with our commercial fish industry. I think a lot of that is because of a long-standing cooperative relationship between enforcement and the industry itself. I have seen greater tension between the industry and federal enforcement than I have between the industry and state enforcement. And over the years, it's been my experience that people have favored state enforcement level versus the federal. I've also felt that it's our industry, and I think it's best taken care of by the state. That's my part, my 2 cents worth on the enforcement aspect, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Ball, and Captain, so maybe you can answer this too. We are providing a service in a sense for fisheries. Because otherwise they would have to have staff and spend money down there doing the same thing. Have we approached, have they offered, has there been any communication to NOAA Fisheries in these times? I mean, I've talked with Mr. Lawn and discussed the financial situation our state's in, along with other states. Have we approached that agency in any way to see if they would help us fund this, at least through the times we're in right now?
Mr. Chair, we have, and actually we are in negotiations right now with NOAA Fisheries for federal money that may come to the state police. Nothing has been finalized, and I am hesitant to sound too hopeful because their pot of dollars has shrunk considerably. We are looking at $225,000, which could possibly fund, and our proposal is that it would fund one officer, I believe, in Coos Bay for commercial fish enforcement. And it would be for the biennium.
I thought I just heard you say that $150,000 or $180,000 per officer.
That's correct. There are some other components in the contract besides just the officer's funding. And I'm sorry, I'm just trying to think here if it's equipment or overtime hours. I mean, there have been several things that we have kind of looked for some agreement with, but I know it was just one FTE.
Representative Krieger?
Chair, real quick, are we still cross-deputizing where they wanted authority to enforce state law? Are we still giving that to them?
Excuse me. I just check. Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, that's correct. We are.
Follow up. That had some benefit at one time. Seems to me like now that just opens the door for harassment. I'm glad that almost everyone sitting on this committee is from the Coastal Caucus, because before we get out of here, we all get to get this has got to get done. Everyone has got to dedicate ourselves to getting that done. We may have to go over Department of Human Resources, K through 12, or someplace and grab some money.
Yeah.
We're going to get some money
sure.
Somewhere.
I'm going to get out of line.
up to any of that, I remind you the mics are live.
That's okay. There's going to be somewhere out of that $11 billion budget that we're going to take care of natural resources in Oregon. If that is what makes Oregon what Oregon is, and our livability of Oregon and our natural resources and what we're going to sell to the tourist industry, then we need to take care of that resource. And it's our obligation to take care of Oregon's resources, not the federal government.
Senator Dukes.
If we were to find some money, whose budget would we put it in? Whose budget was it cut out of?
Senator Dukes, the money was, the general fund money, was cut out of the Fish and Wildlife Division silo money. So it was specific to Fish and Wildlife Enforcement.
But it was cut out of OSP.
That's correct, yes.
So when we put it back in, we better make sure that, and that, I'm sorry, I've never been good with titles, but top person at OSP decides he needs more cuts, that this isn't where he goes.
We better define it very well.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I want to, excuse me, Captain, I want to come back one more thing on that. Make sure I understand this. Of the dedicated funds that you get, you have 95 positions that are filled through dedicated funds. Some of those are environmental or Oregon Salmon Plan or whatever, OWEB or whatever, but I told you, you have a total of 95 dedicated funds, is that right?
Positions, excuse me. I just added 64, 25,
okay.
1, and 5. So,
Mr. Chair, I'm going with you on that one.
Okay.
Well, that's dangerous.
I have you got a frown on your face.
We all love lots of players, too. Can't read those already. No, are we okay?
We are okay.
Okay. Wow. One for me. All right, is there anything else?
Don't hold that. Staff will change tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation today.
Let me just one more check here with the committee. Was there anything else we wanted to discuss? Tomorrow will be entirely dedicated to public testimony because we expect a lot. And we will be in room F. And we'll get through it as fast as we can so that we can go home. When I remember when we did, was it DSL? And I said, this is our day off. The longer you keep us here, the unhappier legislators get. It didn't work, did it? So I'm not going to do that again.
Well, I don't expect this presentation this way to look like something that we've
had. Yeah, no, I'll settle up on this one.
Mr. Siebert, do we have anything else to announce?
If not, thank you all very much.
Yeah.
Good presentation. We'll close the public hearing and adjourn the committee meeting.